Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
This is Full Change with Tom Laidlaw.
Hey, Tom, we got a good show coming up today, but I want to talk. I was checking out some of our listenership, and we had our first listeners in Kenya, which is pretty cool.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So it's great to see, like, where on the globe now we can say people are listening. You know, we have Romania and Spain and UK.
We have Hong Kong and all those places.
Russia, Singapore, China. Yeah, it's been really cool. I don't know.
That's unbelievable. We got somebody in Kenya that's listening.
We got people in Kenya listening. Finland. So if you're our Kenyan listener, or one of the Kenyan listeners, who knows, please reach out to us. We'd love to hear, we'd even have you on and talk to you for a minute, because I'd love to see some of our fans in Kenya, which is really cool. Yeah. But I know we're going to have one of your former teammates on today, King, but I think you got together with another former guest and teammate. We were with Bernie Nichols recently, right?
Yeah, Bernie. How was that? He was in town for the Escape with the Greats for the Ronald McDonald House at Chelsea Piers in Manhattan. Good to see you. Actually, I was walking around. We have a green room in the back, so the players who've done this before know to go to the green room in the back. Bernie didn't know that, so he was out front eating and just standing with the rest of the people. And
right.
Most people didn't recognize him. He didn't have a jersey on or like that. And I'm walking around and just mingling with people. I was actually looking for a couple of guys from RBC, and I'm staring right at Bernie. I didn't realize it was him. And he's looking at me like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, really? What do you think, you wanted a selfie with you?
Well, I didn't think I would see you out there. I knew he was coming in, but he was fine. We laughed with that. Great old guy. We were great teammates, too. He's another funny guy.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be interesting to hear some stories from Jimmy Fox. I would talk about those guys, too, because they all played together. So, yeah, good to see you.
Yeah. It was good. It's just a great event. You guys all go show support. You guys help out. It's a great cause. I mean, we have talked about it before, and we talked about it recently, but just another good thing that you guys and the Rangers and hockey guys do.
And it was really cool, too. They always get a family from the Ronald McDonald House to come and speak. Here's the young 10-year-old girl, Sonia. I think you've talked about this.
We have.
Up there, too. But, man, she was cool. She got up and spoke. It wasn't like she just, like, said a couple words and she was all shy and everything. She was speaking. It was cool.
Well, the Kenyans, they love that, you know, obviously. And Kenya, that's where they have all the marathon runners, right? Are they all from Kenya?
Right. Yes.
The Maasai tribe, they're warriors.
I the girl from Kenya, actually, a while ago.
Did you?
Yeah. Maybe that's if it's her family or something like that. Maybe they're out to get me.
Maybe they're running away. That's why, you know, they're prepping the lawsuit. You did a girl from Kenya. That's interesting. Let's hear more.
She lives here, she lives from Kenya, yeah. Very nice girl, yes.
Do you know the capital of Kenya?
I don't know what she had like a kind of a British accent almost.
Well, they're colonized by the British. The capital is Nairobi, and it's a major city, and that's probably where your former love was from, or friend, or whatever. You dated, okay.
So I don't love myself.
Yeah, well, I think everybody here knows, everybody listening, especially on your Facebook shows, they all know that that you love yourself, and they love you. It's a love fest on your Facebook show.
They love the fact that I love myself. Yeah.
Yes, they do, and it's clear. I mean, well, listen, self love is important.
Oh God, you know, I've got into talking about poop all the time now.
Here we go.
And bidets. I'm into bidets.
We have a bidet.
I know you have a bidet.
Yes.
But I still just can't wrap my head around the whole thing.
It's life changing. Life changing. Yeah. It's life changing.
A bunch of videos on YouTube where the guys are sitting down and they don't sit in the right place and the water goes up their back.
Yeah, but you learn very quickly how to shoot, how to aim, and where to sit, very quickly. And I'm telling you, it's life changing.
Okay, yeah, well,
you should get one.
No, not gonna
happen. Because why would you use paper?
I guess that's what I do. I'm a man. Here's my biggest thing. I have a conspiracy theory that the toilet companies, they make the toilets, also own, they make the brushes as well. So they've designed the toilet so that the poop falls on this. If you don't sit in exactly the right place, the poop falls on the side of the pool of the bowl, stains the bowl, and then you have to get the brush out, clean it. So they've designed it that way instead of just having a straight down. It's a conspiracy.
Yeah, but those toilet streaks, they get washed away with the swirl. I think it's more about
When I land on the side there, it sticks there like glue. It's like tar.
This is not our Facebook. This is not your Facebook audience here. I don't know if our audience is going to like this one. Tom's talking about pooping.
I think people need to be aware of this.
Okay, well, let's just go back for a second. So if you just suppose that you get ketchup on your hand, right?
Yes.
Or dirt. What do you do? You just take a paper towel, wipe it off? You wash it?
Yeah, okay, if I get something on my hand, but I don't have
with water.
Yeah, but then I can use a dish towel to just wipe my hands off. This way.
But you wash it.
You spray your behind. Then you get
the anus.
Okay, but here's the issue. So what if you haven't got all the poop off? And then you go to wipe it, you dry, and don't realize that there's still poop up there.
And you wipe at the end. You water, and then you dry.
So with toilet paper?
At the end, yeah. But so now you go from using a whole, you probably use a friggin' half a roll of toilet paper, but you use just one wipe.
Okay, so now you're still wet from the wipe, so now the toilet paper's falling apart.
No, it doesn't. It's not. I'm telling you, man, it's a game changer.
Well, how are you not wet?
You use a paper towel, bunch it up, give it a quick wipe, you're done.
A paper towel?
No, toilet paper.
Okay, but you're still wet, though.
No, you're not.
How is the water gone? If you just sprayed your butt, how come you're not wet?
It drips. You drip dry for a couple seconds, and then you take a toilet paper and you just wipe off the water.
I can be done right wiping in 10 seconds. It's like 10 minutes, this whole process.
I'm learning some things here. I'm getting a little bit grossed out here, my guy. I think you should really look into it. Have you ever been to a hotel that has a bidet? You probably have, right?
Never used it, no. No.
All right, I'm inviting you to come to my house and use the bidet. You can sample it. Tell me what you think.
I'll be glad to say that I've never used a bidet.
What does it make you less of a man? Is that what you're saying?
No, not at all. I just don't agree with the whole process. I mean, some people want to drive a black car. Some people want to drive a white car.
All of Europe has bidets. It's like a thing, in Europe and other countries. Here, we use paper. It makes no sense.
That's fine.
Anyway.
Because everybody in Europe is using something. I should use it then?
No. I'm just saying they're ahead of us. I was in your camp before. It was a gift from my parents about 5 years ago, and it game changer.
Okay, so somebody said your parents.
They said, "Hey, listen, you're not wiping." Look, you're not wiping all up.
The other way that could be very thoughtful. You see, you know what? That's a thoughtful gift. It wasn't like something that you're going to use that.
Okay. They had one, and they're swearing by it, and then they sent one to us, and it was like, "Oh, this is a great gift." And now it's an attachment. It's not an actual
right.
Seat.
So is it the handle that like the handle in your sink in the kitchen that you hold, or is it actual thing that sprays?
No, you don't do anything. You just hit the button on the side. You just turn the dial if you which setting you want.
Okay, but it starts off being cold, though, right?
It is cold. It's definitely cold. It's a little shocking because it's coming out of the cold water line. So you get used to that too. It's a blend.
Is it warm up?
No, it doesn't warm up. It's an arctic blend. I imagine you can get some heated ones. Ours is not. It's on the cold water line. You turn it on, crank it up.
You know what? I wonder if you have that thing with the whole cold water baths and everything, the cold showers.
Yes.
I wonder if there's some scientists is studying that the cold bidet is good for you. Like, if it does something for you.
Maybe it is. I don't know. I just know that it's a game changer. And anyone, listen, leave us comments. Tell us if you have one, what you think about it, what your thoughts are, because I think it's incredible.
Just think of the cold water. It's like, the sphincter there just swirls up, right? Like,
yeah. Huh. But you get clean. And that's the thing. It cleans it right up. And I'm all about it. So when you come and visit, though you never do, and I think I might have told this story, but Tom was at and I'm going to tell again just because people need to know because you're in love with yourself. So Tom was at the clinic for my son's team, and you were the Ranger guest for a year in practice. They do it every year. Last year was Brian Mullen. This year was Tom. Tom, who knows my wife, Christine, pretty well.
Wonderful person too.
Thank you. I agree. Thank you. So I said, "Hey, Tom, the thing was ending about 6:30. Christine was coming after she got out of work. I said, Christine's coming. Just say hello." He's like, "Yeah, okay." He's in his car with the engine running, waiting to go. Christine pulls up. He gets out. "Hey, Christine," gives her a hug. "See ya." Gets in the car and leaves.
We said, "Say hello." We were exchanging recipes.
It was a 5-second exchange. I was like, "Wow, what a guy."
I'm very specific. You said, "Stop by and say hello." So I stopped by and say hello.
No, but I know in your head, you're driving home saying, "See what I did? I sacrificed. I waited 5 extra minutes to say hello. I'm such a good guy."
It's very true. Yeah. And then I thought there was traffic too coming home. So I was just wearing it. And you were like, "I got the same."
There was a bad accident. I think it was on the thruway. But yeah, but you did stay. So I'll give you props for that. But now we're going to have a show with one of your old teammates. And I said, "We love these." hopefully if when Jim's listening, he's not turned off by the opening. We're talking about bidets and pooping. But we're going to have a king, a lifer king, guy who's been there forever, guy you play with. We're going to have Jim Fox on. This should be a good one.
Oh, yeah. Legendary guy. Like, he's been with the Kings since he was like 19, 20 years old as a player that stayed the whole time. And he's a good guy, too. You know, he was a good little player, good team, really good team. And again, when I got to L.A., a great bunch of guys, and he was one of them. I'm looking forward to talking to him. You know, I haven't talked to him in a long time.
Yeah, this should be great. Yeah. Jimmy Fox, number 19? That was his number, right?
Yes, he was. Number 19 with the big helmet.
Big goofy helmet. Right? The one Danny Gare. Was that a Northland, like the one Danny Gare had? Was one of those?
Yeah. And there's a few guys wearing. Mike Foligno wore it. Those kind of guys.
That's bowling ball helmets.
Yeah, Jerry Korab, all those guys. Yeah.
So this should be a good one. Right. Full
go
chain.
Go clean your butt.
There you go. Tom, we got a teammate show today. I know you love these. We get one of your former teammates on. We got a Los Angeles King through and through. He's currently the voice of the Kings and has been for a very long time. Today we have on Jim Fox.
Foxy, how are you doing? Good to see you, brother.
Tommy, doing really good. Thank you very much for having me. I watch you guys all the time, so very nice to be on.
You know, one of my proudest moments that was part of you were part of was when the Kings won the Cup. You got interviewed, I think it was, and you got teary-eyed. And I mean this in a very good way, because I know you've been a King your whole career, right? Your whole adult life. So I know how much it meant to you. So when I saw that, I was like, that was pretty cool, right, to be part of that. So great job.
Yeah, you know, it was one of those where it was, I think it was a day or two later, it was the day of the parade. And, you know, you bet you've done the same things I have. You know, you go into school so many times and you speak to kids. And one of the answers that always, one of the questions that always was asked by the kids was, how many times have the Kings won the Stanley Cup? Oh, yeah. And I've done 100 appearances. And I would always have to say, we haven't won it yet. And that's one of the first things that came into my mind is now when I go to a school and talk to kids, I'll have a different answer. And fortunately, now I can say twice. So
what? So how many total years, how many years did you play?
Played 10 years. I missed one full season. Actually, Gretz's first year here. I missed that because I had 4 knee surgeries in that 1 year, so I was never able to make it back. And then came back the following year and played only 11 games, but then retired due to the knee injuries. But if you go from 80 till 90, it was 10 seasons. Even though I missed that one season, as you know, Tommy, I probably worked harder in that season than any other season because when you get surgery, another one, two on the right, two on the left. It's like you're just in constant therapy. You're trying to get back and trying to make it work. And unfortunately, couldn't get back and had to cut her short a little bit. But I still like to count that year.
Yeah, I do. I would. You're in the National Hockey League still. Yeah, no question. And then you broadcasted with the Kings now for 41 years?
No, it's I think it's 34 as a broadcaster. And it's something, I mean, you know, I do like, I am proud to bring up that I am, as we speak, the longest tenured Los Angeles King employee.
Sure. Yeah. That's cool. I can't imagine around the league who's worked longer in one organization as well, right? As a player, then transitioning. Yeah.
No, there's one, I think it might be Mickey Redmond.
Oh,
if I'm not mistaken, how long he was with Detroit as a player. And then of course, as a broadcaster, and he's still going right now. So,
right. Also, he was in Montreal for a while too, though, wasn't he, as a player?
Yes, he was.
Yeah. So for people that have just been with one organization their entire life, wow, that's cool.
Yeah. That's as you know, it's a place you can get used to very easy.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Unbelievable. Well, you know, when I first left New York, I've told the story many times. I love New York. So I wasn't like I hated L.A. We had a great group of guys, but we'd rented a home in Palos Verdes, and they were sitting in the hot tub on Christmas Eve thinking, this is pretty cool. So, yeah, I loved it there. Loved my time there.
Yeah, it's so, you know, you get used to it. And I guess that's why they say everyone's laid back here, because until the last 2 years, you never have to worry about rain. But I'll tell you what, the last 2 years, we've got our fair share of rain. So yeah, we're complaining right now.
I'm just not used to it. So where'd you grow up? Where's home?
200 miles north of Toronto, small town just outside of Sudbury, Ontario, Coniston, 2,500 people. So, you know, but Sudbury was right there. But we, you know, all our schooling was done in Coniston until we had the high school. We didn't have any high schools in Coniston, so we had to move to Sudbury to do that. But at 15, I left to play Tier 2 junior hockey in North Bay, which is about 75 miles away. So not too far. I could go home on most weekends or, you know, days that we had off or holidays and things of that sort. But yeah, great experience growing up in a small town.
How was that to leave home at 15? Some people don't like just say, oh, he left home. But that's a big thing, right, to leave home at 15 years old.
It's interesting, Tom. It's timely right now because in the major junior draft, the Ontario OHA back then, now the OHL, I was the first overall selection.
Oh, wow.
At 15 years old.
Wow.
And I didn't go. I ended up not going to Windsor. I went there for training camp. Anyway, I'll try to keep this as short as possible.
Go. Don't keep it short. Keep going.
Because I've been contacted a couple of times right now because Windsor now has the first overall pick again. It's the first time they've had it since 1976.
Oh, wow.
So I've been contacted by a couple of people asking me why I didn't go. I did report, but I was homesick. You're asking how tough it was. The previous year I spent in North Bay and I was away from home, I could go home just about anytime.
Sure. Yep.
The trappers in North Bay, they arranged for me that, you know, long distance calls, no problem. Anything, they took care of all of that. So I could be in constant, you know, with my girlfriend, who is now my wife still, Susie, parents, anything like that.
Hold on a second. You're setting records all over the place here. For the longest person with one organization, the longest person to stay with one woman. I didn't realize that was your high school sweetheart. Wow.
We started in, I was in fifth grade. She was in sixth grade. So
awesome.
We
kind of you got the cougar.
Yeah, exactly. So I ended up not going to Windsor and I was kind of homesick, but then because Tier 2, you could still be NCAA eligible.
Yep.
Major A, you could not. So you couldn't even play a preseason game. So I was getting all these offers from everywhere, NCAA. So I said, you know, I want to consider that. So I went to training camp in Windsor, but then went back home, never played a preseason game, never played a game. And that's.
So what happens? You went on to play junior though, correct?
Yes. During that next season, so I went back to North Bay again to play Tier 2 to keep my eligibility, but I still needed one more year because I was so young. I needed 12th grade, right?
Right.
So at the end of that second year in North Bay, I was 17 years old or 16, turning 17, and Brian Kilray, who was the coach, the general manager of the 67s in Ottawa, he traded for my rights during that season. Didn't play there, but traded for my rights, and then I ended up visiting Ottawa during the summertime and just loved it, fell in love with the city, fell in love with the team. The players were there. They helped me. It was just great. So, I ended up being traded for Ben Wilson.
Oh.
When he went from Ottawa to Windsor. So it was a very interesting. You know, now I think back, you know, I feel great that I went to Ottawa, but I feel bad that I, you know, ended up, you know, first overall pick and yeah. Not going to Windsor, and it cost them a pick and they had to make some trades and all that stuff. Right. Their head coach, Wayne Maxner, he visited me before the draft. He came to my home in Coniston. He drove down there, met with me and my parents. And I was honored to be the first overall, sure. You know, but then I just couldn't handle it. I was too young.
Yeah, so you didn't anticipate you feeling that way when he came to see you. You had all intentions to play for them.
No question. I told him, yes, I was so excited. I was proud. Okay, I'm going to be first. And then I just, when it all happened, I just started to really question, you know, I'm away from home here. Can I do this a different way? And then again, at the timing just, it worked in the favor of the 67s. And that's when I started receiving all the NCAA bids or invites and scholarships and everywhere, you know. It was Notre Dame and Harvard and Michigan, North Dakota and Minnesota and Boston College, everywhere. So then you just really started to think, and I said, well, I'm getting these. I can't play major. I've got at least to keep that option alive. And but they ended up trading me. I liked it there. So and I'm happy I went to Ottawa. I just, you know, I'm sitting, you know, that many years later thinking, I wish.
Yeah. But you know what, though? You got to do what's right for Jimmy Fox, too, right? I mean, the rest of the teams are always doing what's right for them. And I think people get confused sometimes with the NHL draft, similar to what you did. Just because you're drafted by a team, they really don't own your well, they own your rights for that period of time. But they really can't tell you what to do, especially if you haven't signed a contract. So, but I got to tell you, I was drafted by Roger Nielsen and the Peter Peets in the second round. And I left the farm, first time away from the farm. And I was close enough to being a good enough player to make the team. But socially, I just couldn't handle it. And I was 16 years old. So it's, I think people just don't understand sometimes what it's like to be the small town of guys leaving home, the pressures of playing, all the new things. So it worked out for you anyway. So and then how many years did you play at Ottawa?
Played 3 years in Ottawa. I had a phenomenal team my first year. We didn't win. We lost to your Peterborough Petes. They usually were our nemesis. But Bobby Smith,
yes.
Steve Payne, Eddie Hospodar was on the team. We had a really good team. We ended up not making it through against the Petes. But then I played one year. And then my final year, 79-80, we were first overall during the regular season. We won a playoff series against Oshawa, and then we lost the playoff series against your bad guys again, the Peterborough Petes.
Oh, is that right? Oh, okay. Yeah, they have a great real history there, too. The Peterborough Petes are a strong franchise, yeah.
And Jim went crazy that third year. He averaged 3 points a game. He had 166 points in that last year.
Nice. Which is nice.
52 games.
Well, was that your draft year, Jim?
Yeah, it was, because I was not selected the previous year, which I was eligible for. I'll tell you, Tom, I know you're – it's fitness related.
Oh.
I was 205 pounds my last second year in Ottawa.
All muscle though, right?
All muscle. And Keller calls me aside at the end of the year and he says, you might not be drafted. They don't think you're committed. They think you're a good player, but they're questioning your commitment. Wow. And I went 30 days, lost 30 pounds in 30 days. I ate two bacon and tomato sandwiches every day. That was it. Started running, and so by the time I got to camp the next year, I was 170 pounds.
Wow.
Great shape. And went on to a good year. It's interesting. On the line I played with, Yvon Jolie was our left winger. He ended up being drafted by Montreal, which, talking about pressure, like he was drafted by the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah.
He was a French Canadian kid.
Yeah.
And Sean Simpson never played in the NHL, but played you won a Calder Cup in the Arkansas League. Excuse me here. I had 65 goals that year. That was the least amount on my line.
Oh, is that right?
Other guys had 66. Wow. So we were filling the net.
And then ultimately, so what round did you get drafted by the Kings?
I was drafted first round, 10th overall. So it kind of benefited me the previous year. If I would have been drafted, I would not have been gone first round.
Right.
And he only had six rounds that previous year. And I think they limited, if you're underage, you had to go in the first round.
Right.
So it wasn't, I was went through six rounds, but then the following year, because of the year I had, ended up 10th overall to the Kings.
So the fitness then, I've always seen you as in very good shape. So you learned a lesson from that year and just maintained your conditioning?
I learned that people perceive what's going on and, they were right. I was having a good time. I was still scoring and still, doing all that stuff. But it's about now you're, people in the NHL, professional league, are starting to consider you. And when they consider you that you're not committed, that was a whole different thing. So, yeah, I flicked the switch and I just said, I've got to do this. If I'm going to play in the NHL, I've got to at least prove to them that I want to. And I did so. And then in my little small town, again, in Coniston, we had a weightlifting club, which many older members of Canadian Olympic weightlifting teams. And then Ralph Roy, who was his brother Aldo Roy, they were very popular, very successful in Canadian weightlifting back then. They had a son, Kevin Roy, and he was a Canadian and Commonwealth champion, went to the Olympics. But that's where I really started. I started to go in the gym with those guys. You're in the gym and they're elite, world-class athletes. You know, that's back in the day when, you know, now they do the cleans and, the, you know, that wasn't popular back then. But I was working out with those guys, and that's all they did, right? Squats and cleans, squats and cleans, those power cleans, and try to really improve your strength. And that went a long way for me to learn from those guys. And they worked out, you know, at least 6 days a week, if not seven. I mean, they were on, they had the routines. Basically, they followed all the Russian weightlifters and their routines and mimicked their training schedules and nutrition and what they're eating. So I was able to follow along with those guys.
Wow, very cool. So then you go to the King's Camp. Where was the camp in the first year? Was it in L.A.?
It was not. Victoria, B.C.
Oh.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Beautiful. We were there 1 year when Gretz came in, yeah.
So it was, you know, we went there quite a bit, and it was, you know, just a small town, but... Yeah. You know, you're off the coast there of Vancouver, and it is absolutely beautiful. You walk from the hotel to the rink every day.
Yeah.
Those days we did the 2 days, right?
Yeah.
It was just an incredible experience there. But I remember flying into LA the first time, and it was like, you know, I'd flown before, but miles of houses just never ended. And then finally you get to LAX, and you go, man, this is a big spot.
Wow. And the weather's beautiful, too. I remember when I got training there, people were saying, we can't have hockey in L.A. It's just not going to work. But Jay Wells was quoted. He was talking to Jeff Chickering. We have Chickering on the show. And Jay had said to him, he said, listen, I would beg to play in L.A. again. That's why people want to play there. Like, that's the greatest place to play. And it was. It was fantastic. So I see you go to training camp there. So guys like Marcel was there, Jerry Korab, some older guys. You had some good older guys in that team, too, right?
Cog. Big Cog.
Yeah.
We joke, he's still sitting by the phone waiting for a call for someone to sign him again. great group of guys.
Yeah.
That year, Tommy, we had the fourth best record in the league.
Yeah.
And we had the best road record in the league. And back then, it was 80-game schedule, 21 teams, home and home, 2-2 against every team in the league. So not an unbalanced schedule.
Right.
So we had to – our closest team we had to play was Denver. We didn't have Anaheim, didn't have Phoenix, didn't have San Jose. So we had a tough, tough road schedule flying commercial back then.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, we had a real good year and then ended up losing to the Rangers in the first round. So
We didn't. I think we had a big, tough team. We just
said, oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a 2 out of 3. Yeah, it was 2 out of 3.
Three out of five.
Okay. Yeah. So that was, you know, that was a tough blow to us. And ended up at the playing, you know, good year, bad year, good year, bad year, good year, bad year. It went like that all the time. And never had.
What do you think happened in that series? Because like Marcel Dion didn't score any goals. Charlie Sim was hurt.
Hospodar beat him up, though. You got to remember that, too, right?
We had a little line brawl there, and he jumped on top. Yeah. There was, you know, it was, I would say, looking back, understood what happened that year. But again, they never kept our teams together so we could learn from it and go back the next year. I swear, half the team changed every year.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to learn from your experiences as a group and build and grow as a group, unfortunately, we were never given that opportunity because every year they changed half the team.
Yeah, we were the same way in New York. You know, Herbie Brooks came in the next year, and that tough team we had, he tore that apart. Changed. We had a good team, but then he got fired, and they changed the team again, the same as you guys. Yeah. Well, so Marcel, great player. Is he a good team player too?
It's a tough question. I'm pretty close with Mars. I think closer with most guys. Tough guy to get to know. Spoke English, but he had that language where the nuances, you know. So I think many times he was perceived perhaps differently than he was actually in his own head, you know, saying things. Once he got over the blue line, I mean, this guy was not given enough credit for how tough he was. Cause you know, you guys used to lay the lumber on us back then, and he would just fight through those checks. Yep. And like, once he got over the blue line back then, the way the goaltenders were, he could score with a wrist shot.
Yeah.
I mean, he would just catch guys and throw it at the net and, you know, 721 career goals. That's right. not too bad at all.
So you had the triple line, the crown line. What line were you on?
I ended up first year, I was on the fourth line. Greg Therrien, rest in peace, just passed away a couple of years ago.
Oh, I didn't know that about him. Wow.
Yeah, he did. And then Steve Jensen just passed away a year ago. Man.
He passed away as well?
Yeah. You know, Steve, he had those camps in Minnesota.
Yeah.
You know, U.S. Olympian.
Right.
Great skater.
Yeah.
Remember we used to do those six laps in training camp?
That was, yeah.
Do the six laps. He would do those like nothing. It would be nothing. Great scrapper. Really tough. People didn't know that because he was kind of a pretty boy. Little blonde hair and great skater. But he could throw. Big lefty. Man, he would. But, yeah, the first year was mostly with those guys on the fourth line. Didn't play every game. I think it was scratched like 10 times.
Right.
But we had a good team.
Yeah.
That was really fun. That was Dave Lewis was my first roommate.
Oh, okay.
He'd just come over the previous year from the Islanders. And, of course, Butch Goring goes the other way and wins four cups in a row.
Yeah. It was Mike Murphy was there, too. Mike Murphy was
good. Mike Murphy, one of the best team guys for me. So I'm a right winger, and I'm just coming in.
Right.
And about 2 years later, maybe 3 years later, I actually take Mike's job. You know what I mean? It's just that he's getting older. I'm kind of progressing in my career, so I'm getting all his ice time. And after practice, he would spend time with me, throwing pucks along the wall, around the boards. You know, I have to take them, you know, get the puck out. For a guy that was, you know, losing his job to a younger guy, he mentored us. That didn't bother him at all. And
that's cool.
You know, I think he's still kind of semi, he's mostly retired, but, you know, you're talking 50 plus years of the NHL.
Yeah.
Either as a player, a coach, or as an executive in the NHL.
Yeah, he was always great. I tell a story all the time where when I first got there, he was coaching. And so my first full year there, I had traded the trade dive. We go up to Victoria for training camp. And we got to this little dancing establishment. And one of the girls working there took a shine to me. And she came to practice the next day. And so she's sitting in the stands all by herself. And all the guys are hooting and hollering and everything. And Murph comes over to me and goes, "You need to go home now." Because it's more of a distraction. You're being there. So he sent me home.
The beautiful, the wonderful, the talented.
Oh.
Natasha.
Oh, the Ducks, yes. On the East stage.
Oh, but, Tom, the next year, the Kings team is part of the greatest comeback in NHL history, and that's the Darrell Evans game.
Yeah, Miracle on Manchester.
What kind of regular season? You have a good regular season that year?
No. We finished. I still think it's the biggest point differential ever in the NHL history between the underdog winning a series. If I'm not mistaken, I think we were 48 points behind Edmonton. Then, of course, we play the first game in Edmonton, and true to the 80s playoffs, we win 10-8 in Edmonton. Wow. First game of the playoffs.
Wow.
They come back, take a lead, that type of stuff. So we're down game 3, 5-0 going into the third period. We're down 5-0. We end up scoring to tie it, and then Darrell Evans wins it in overtime. Incredible, just an incredible series.
What are you guys saying in the room, Jim? You're down 5-0. Are you saying, yeah, still do this, guys, or just whatever, we're going home?
We're asked that all the time, and it's the biggest cliche in the world, but it was, "Hey, guys, let's win a period. You know, let's go out and win a period." We had no thoughts of winning the game. Let's go out and win a period. Let's just go out, you know. I don't like to joke about it, but we pissed them off enough that they went on to win 5 of the next 7 Stanley Cups. So
there you go.
There's something
more. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. Then the infamous trade, Marcel Dion gets traded. What do we think when he got traded?
What a return.
Yeah.
Yeah. We couldn't believe how much we got back.
I love you.
No, it was, we'd heard there's a lot of stories, contracts and GM, and Rogge was the GM at the time, and Rogge and Marcel were probably pretty tight. And then I think it came down to, I think it came down to, "Hey, if you're not going to sign me, trade me." And Rogge traded him.
So, I heard a story that he went home and told his wife, and she threw the phone at him or something like that. Because,
It's weird. It's I mean, you know, he was, as you know, Gratz comes a couple of years later and puts us on the map, changes the face of the NHL, changes the face of the hockey industry. But Marse, you know, if he wasn't around, maybe the Kings, you know, who knows if we're going to even survive that.
Sure.
But then, you know, the guys that came over for him, that just, you know, solidified.
How many pucks did you get?
Do you remember, I tell the story, so Bobby Carpenter had been to in Washington, had a contract holdout, I think, for the whole season, I believe it was, got traded to the Rangers, was only there half a year. We then got traded to LA. We come back on our first road trip out east, and we come to Washington. And we're in warm-ups, and this big, large gentleman is yelling everything at Bobby Carpenter. Didn't he suck? You know, your dog sucks a little bit. Remember Tiger Waves throwing the pucks at the guy during the warm-up?
I remember that. Exactly.
Oh,
I remember that guy all over, like, just awful.
Yeah.
Well, Tiger was, oh, man. That's a treat right there.
Yes. Yeah. No kidding.
A treat. I ended up playing with Tiger for a couple of years, actually, like, on my line. And, man, you expend more energy after the whistle goes than you do during the play, because every stoppage, he's got his stick in someone's face. He's yipping at someone. He's going after him. Man, you got at least mill around. As you know, I didn't do much as far as aggression, but it was like, you got to be in there. You got to hold long. And
yeah, totally.
Get tired at the end of the game.
And what an intelligent guy, though, too, right? Like, once he threw those pucks, or told us, he waited for everybody to get in the locker room. I'm sitting there watching him. And then once everybody get in there, he says, nobody does that to my teammates. So he knew what he was doing. He built his reputation. And that stuff. Yeah.
We had a thing in Quebec City where Tiger was not dressed that night. And in the warm-up, it was another fan issue in Quebec City, but it was actually a cop behind the bench. And some fan was throwing water or something at us. And the cop was not doing anything. And this was still in warm-up.
Right.
And all of a sudden, we're on the ice, and we see Tiger in his, you know, suit circling around and coming from the top down the stairwell. And he starts getting into with the cop, like, hey, do something here. Like, do your job. And next thing you know, we're almost all in the stands up.
Yeah, Tiger draws people to the fight, doesn't he? Yeah.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, so one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, but one of the dirtiest, nastiest players on the ice. Who would think that categorized?
Wow. Dirtiest?
Well, I mean, he could be dirty, but tough, physical, leader, Dave Taylor.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Dirty. Yeah. He's one of those guys, like Doug Gilmore was like that, where you don't play each other that much. There's really no hatred there. And you're playing the game, all of a sudden he's spearing you or something like that. What are you doing?
I would say he would rather shove his stick down your throat than give you the puck.
Isn't that true? Yeah.
Oh. And he would do it. Now, there are stories they're talking with him and Bubba.
Yeah.
Back with the rest. I just got into the Kings there in my first year. You go play the Rangers, and like, you're playing them four times a year then. But each year it went along. They would tell Dave, do not get involved with Bubba Beck. First shift, bang. They go at that. That gloves are dropped. And you know, Bubba probably got the best of them a couple times, but that would never stop Dave.
Yeah.
ever stop him.
So they didn't want him going after Bubba because he didn't want to get hurt or get drowned or something, right?
And also stay on the ice, you know, he's part of the Triple Crown line, one of the, you know, most prolific lines ever. But once he pinched down on Dave, and if there was contact, it was like, okay, here we go. And they went every single game for 3 or 4 years. They would just, to the point where we were telling his teammates, don't do it. The coaching,
I didn't know that. I didn't have to tell Bubba that. I don't know that. Oh, yeah. I tell you, one of the biggest, there's a lot of guys like that that are tough players, but really nice guys off the ice. But Dave's probably the biggest gap there, right? Where he's just this incredible gentleman, great family guy, everything, sweet man. We go on the ice and savage out there.
Soft spoken. I think Dave had a speech impediment when he came.
Yeah.
He learned and went to UCLA here, took classes, learned how to, you know, speak in public better and get over that type of stuff. But very, very humble.
Yeah.
Very humble man. But yeah, when he gets on the ice, he is the guy. That's one of the guys that we hope we all did, but there's different levels. He left it all on the
ice. 100%. No question.
In the games, he's full of ice bags everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. And that wouldn't stop him the next game. Same thing.
Yeah. People can look back at their careers and say, I have a pretty good career. They can look back at his career and say, like, I got everything out of it possible, right? Give him a good.
Yeah,
it's good. Yeah. Rich Grant got traded. Phil Sykes, Mark Hardy, Cowhead, Mark Hardy, G. Wells is good. Dean Kennedy was there. Oh,
yeah. God. Yeah. I talked to Psycho or text with Psycho. We see him. He's in Minnesota right now or just outside of Minneapolis. So we're going to St. Paul to play the Wild, see him there.
Yeah.
Dean Kennedy, we've had a couple of birthday parties up here for me and Susie, my wife, and stuff like that. And Dean and Tammy come back. It's Mark Hardy. Still see him every day. He works for the Kings still. So,
Nice. Yeah. I saw Bernie Nichols was in New York a couple of days ago for an event. I saw him too. So, same with Bernie.
I played with Bernie more than anyone else.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So he was at center with me and I, you know, played with him with Tiger.
Yeah.
We had Terry Ruskowski. You talk about another tough guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Little guy, right? Man, throw him. And then Brian McClellan.
Now the big back. Yeah.
I was roommate, best pillow fighter in the history of Vampire.
I think Matt was.
He'd be throwing with the pillows, and you could still feel his fist through the pillow. Oh, I mean, it was like, and we would always try, you know, they try to get him to scrap more in games, right? Because he was one of those guys that was strong.
Yeah.
When he grabbed onto you, man, oh, man, you would not. Yeah. He won a Stanley Cup with Calgary Flames, and then, of course, GM when Washington won.
So, okay, so I roomed with Bob Bourne, and Bob were the old guys who played together against the Islanders and all that kind of stuff. So we're practical joking all the time, getting into people's rooms, doing things. So you were probably part of this, and you should be very proud of it, too. Because
I was not part of it.
Oh, do you remember, though?
I deny.
Do you remember? I'll never forget, Bob and I come back to the room at 2 or 3 in the morning. We've had way too much to drink, and we go to our room, and the guys that you're saying, don't do it properly. You're probably telling the guys not to do it. They've taken all the furniture out of our room. And
put it in the hallway.
Oh, my God. I was dying. It was such a good joke. I was just dying. And it was perfect. They set everything up perfect, got the clothes hanging up the whole bit.
Yes. Well, the thing who it was, but...
Psycho had to be perfect. Psycho.
He was my centerman for a while, and his initials are BM.
Okay. That was one of the best. We were just going to lay down and go to sleep, but I think security came in and said, no, you got to put it back in the room.
Psycho was what had to be involved too.
Well, God, yeah.
Those guys were always, who knows? I'm still going, but they never got me. Bernie had me one time. You know what they do, right? They get your key.
Yep.
Especially after a pregame meal.
Right.
So they get your key and they get into your room and they leave pregame meal early and they wait in your room. And then they wait in the shower. They draw the curtains so of course you go back after you eat, you know, you go to the bathroom. Whew, I still remember one time I'm walking in Calgary. I'm walking down the hallway and it was bright out that day, whatever. And underneath my door, I could see someone's feet walking with just that little space there with the lights coming through.
Yeah.
Well, I knew someone was in there, but I was able to get them. When I got in, I opened up the shower.
That's funny. One of the best was Larry Playfair when he was there too, right?
Man, I love Larry. Happened to be, you know, you get Psycho, really close friend, Dave Taylor, him and his wife Beth. When I first got there, you know, we got together. Dave was just about the same amount of time outside of Sudbury, on the other side of Sudbury, as I was. So he grew up in a small town called Levack. So we were from the same area. So we kind of bought, but Larry Playfair, Dean Kennedy, Psycho. Yeah. Great. Larry Playfair and his wife, they came to a Halloween party one time dressed as a clothesline. They stood out on the front lawn of Phil Sykes' house with like sheets over top, so you can't see who they are, but then they had clothes drawn and pinned up between. They stood out there for like 2 hours. They didn't even join the party.
Oh, God.
And, oh, my.
Larry was a good practical joker, too.
He's right at the top.
Yes. And right. He would take his time. Like, he'd get to the rink early, and he'd take like hours to set this thing up, and yeah, he was good.
So Jay Wells gets married here in Little Chapel, just PB, and we come back. It's 2 or 3 in the morning. We come back to my house down to the bottom of Redondo, and he's back. And they've got white tuxedos for his thing. So Susie, my wife, 3 in the morning, she whips up some spaghetti, red sauce, meat sauce. You know, we've got about 10, 20 people in the house. We're going to have to eat at 3 in the morning. And Larry Playfair grabs a handful of spaghetti sauce. And just he goes on to the back, you know, hey Jay, how you doing? Pounds you on the back and gives him a,
with a white suit.
We don't know what's going on, but that, you know, the touch was just messed up. I can't imagine him returning it the next day.
He got me some one time in New York. First time back in New York, I'm all excited to be back home. So I'm getting in the cab. He'd gotten into the locker room and sewed the inside of the pocket, my suit pocket, sewed the money inside. And like it was like couldn't get it out. And I didn't know what was going on. I get in the cab, to the cab driver, take back to this hotel, get there. The cab driver doesn't speak English either. Now I can't put my hand in the pocket to get the money out. The cab driver thinks I'm trying to rip him off.
The best thing I've ever seen. I hope it's not one of those you had to be there, but Phil Sykes, near the end of his career, and he gets his eyes done. He had all this scar tissue over his eyes like a boxer, right? To the point where it was starting to impede his vision. So he gets the surgery done on both eyes. And Harpo and I go visit him about 2 days later. Mark Hardy and myself, we go. And we knock on the door, and Laura, his wife, answers, opens the door. You know Harpo. So
yeah, he's good.
Just the deadpan.
Yeah.
So he gets up. Psycho gets up from the couch. He's kind of lying down, and he gets up, and his eyes are completely shut. Like, you can't see anything because of the swelling from the surgery. Like, Laura has to help him. He cannot see a thing. And Harpo goes, hey, Psycho, when you having the surgery?
Harpo is funny. He's good.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's great.
It's like he couldn't even breathe hardly. Everything was just all, man.
Oh, God. We had some good guys come through, like Timmy Waters came through. He was a great team player and everything.
The Mudman.
Yeah. Okay, so then, you know, we have those years, and then Wayne Gretzky gets traded. Where were you the day it happened? We were obviously in L.A.
I was in L.A., and I had heard through Ron Salzer, my agent, that it was possible. He had heard through the grapevine, through Jerry Buss's office, the owner of the Kings and the Lakers and the Forum at the time, that something was going on, and he kind of gave us a heads up. But when it happened, it's one of those, the first thing I did, I picked up the phone and called my dad.
Yeah.
Dad, great one's coming here. And it was like, you know, we kind of knew it, but it was, that's just how, that catches your attention.
Yeah.
Everything changed after that.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, I had my bowling ball helmet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't get a helmet that fit. I wore them in junior in Ottawa for 3 years. They were the Lang, the same, they made it, and it was a nice custom fit and a harness inside. For all these years in LA, I'm playing in the NHL. I can't get the helmet I want because they just, you know, they don't care about the Kings.
Yeah.
As soon as Rets comes, whatever you want.
Yeah, no kidding.
The equipment reps were there. The referees treated you different. The front office treated you, the NHL, everyone. Of course, the media, everyone came aboard. As soon as Gretz came, everything changed.
Yeah, totally. I'll never forget, we were in Montreal playing. Ray Scampanello, the linesman. It's a Saturday night, hockey night in Canada. I think Larry Robinson, Guy Lafleur are still in Montreal. And Scampanello, at the start of the game, he leans to me on the bench. He goes, Tommy, this is unbelievable. Like, he was excited himself. It really did change. So the only thing is, too, we had a good team before. Like, I really liked our team. Young Jimmy Carson, Luke Robitaille. So the team was still good. It wasn't like, and Wayne's credit, he just took it to a different level. But it was more like, remember being in the locker room after the game with all the movie stars and everything?
Oh, man, it was pretty, it was crazy. It was, I mean, we had a little bit of that with Jerry Buss, the doc. He would come by, you know, my first year, he'd come by after games, after, you know, we had some Billy Harris and Charlie Simmer and, hey, okay, we're going to the Playboy Mansion. Let's go. Let's go. Oh. So he's the owner of the team. Right. And he would, you know, be taking everyone out. And we saw everyone. Yeah, everyone. Kurt and Goldie were, pretty close friends with Wayne. So they started coming around. And
Bruce, dude, weren't they close with Bruce too, as well?
With our,
Bruce McDonald, weren't they close? Goldie and...
They had the same circles, right?
Right.
Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
The biggest one for me ever, Tom, was... during the playoffs, well, I think when the cup run, when Nancy and Ronald Reagan came to the game.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. And came to they came to the locker room after.
Right.
You know, met with Wayne and things of that sort. So that was, I guess it was movie industry, right?
Oh, yeah.
He was a former actress, but by then he was ex-president.
Right. That was funny. When they first started coming in, it was like really cool to have the movie stars in there. But then after a while, it's kind of like, oh, get out. Like, they're all hammered from drinking all day long, or all night long and everything. So
they never think of that right that way, right? That, well, they're coming into your workplace.
Yeah.
And it's a different thing. But that was part of Bruce McDonald's plan, right?
Right.
That was the plan to gain attention, to make sure to attract everyone. That was, I'm sure he wrote it down. I'm sure it was part of a business plan. There's many of those entertainment people you can get to the games that draws more attention, more eyes, especially in LA.
Yeah, we did a show with Bruce. He was very interesting talking about what happened with the whole going to jail thing and everything, you know, after. Yep. Obviously he did something wrong and he paid the price for it, but man, he treated us great too, though. I mean, he was fantastic.
We're in the island, Tom. He'd just taken over. I think he owned 25% of the team at the time.
Yep. Yep.
And Bob Kudelski, I think we're still flying commercial then. That was before Bruce brought his plane. Maybe the first team had their own plane type.
Yeah, yeah.
Bruce made it happen. But Bob Kudelski had lost his luggage, so didn't have his luggage. So Bruce is in the locker room in the morning skate, and Bob's got whatever he had on the night before. He peels off like $500 bills, gives it to Bob, and says, hey, go buy yourself a suit. So,
I got to say, there's many times on the road, he'd hand me like $1,000, $2,000, and take everybody out for beer.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he was always doing that.
It was cool.
I had Coke and water and stuff. So
yes, definitely. Well, we had to drag you out to just get you outside into the bar. I mean, it was a struggle. Dedicated man you are. Okay, so what year did you retire? That before they went to the finals?
Yes, 90. So I played 11 games before Christmas, and that was with Gretz. Like, I missed the first year with Gretz game. You know, I'd like to think that I was a potential candidate to play with him if healthy.
Sure.
You know, especially that first year.
Yeah.
Right winger, you know, that type, you know, could put the puck in the net decently.
Yep, absolutely.
But never happened. And then I ended up retiring halfway through that year. And the previous year where I missed all the entire year, I went up to Scotty Carmichael was our PR director at the time. And I said, Scott, I would like to help. I'd like to work in community relations. We didn't even have a community relations department yet.
Oh.
We didn't need one, right? They did. Psycho and I would sit around locker room and go, you know, we didn't even have a charity golf tournament. We're an NHL team. So when Gretz came, boom.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we needed that. So I was going to miss the whole year. I knew that. And I went to Scotty. So I went up and started working in community relations. So then when I came back the next year to play and played a half year, retired at around just after Christmas, they offered me a job. They offered me a job in community relations.
Okay.
Then the following year was my first year. Then another Wayne Gretzky thing. How does he affect your life? Well, for us here in LA in the industry, they used to have a simulcast, which we're actually back to doing now, where the radio and TV feed go on the same signal.
Sure.
So you only need one group of broadcasters. Well, they decided, let's have two revenue streams. Let's split up the radio TV, because Gretz came and all of a sudden they want our games on TV. Sure. Before that, who cared?
Yeah.
And so I was just recently retired. I was the new guy on the block, and they said, okay, would you like to do it?
Right.
So we're going to a preseason game And I'm getting into a limo with Bruce, someone else, Roy Malacher, who was president. And they asked, would you like to do broadcasting? I said, yeah, I'd love to. And I thought it was radio because I had no idea they were doing this split of the simulcast.
Right.
And they said, no, we'd like you to go on TV. And so they had a new station called On TV. Bill Daniels out of Denver start. That was the basic part. That was the start of cable.
Wow.
You know, back then. And we had a whole bunch of games on there, and that's where it started for TV.
Because Tom was a broadcaster for...
Well, I was doing the radio at the time.
Yeah, we were working together. Yeah, like doing the same job, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, my first 3 years, Tom, I was a mess. Like, I was still doing community relations full-time.
Oh.
And I just, like, I was doing... Like to get up in the morning to work out. So up at 6 and on game nights, home at 12. So long days and through, you know, did that for about 3 years. And finally, I had to pack me in.
So you got out of the community relations. You continued on broadcasting.
I remember I went to a meeting with Tim Leiwicki, who had just taken over the Kings as AEG, our current ownership right now. And I'm thinking I'm going to this meeting. I've got some ammunition. I'm going to tell him I don't want to do community relations and I just want to do TV. And that's going to, you know, be my bargaining chip that they're going to take. So I sit down and I say, you know what? I don't want to do. And the first thing out of Tim's mouth was, you don't want to work for me anyway.
Oh,
so all my ammunition, he said, yeah, great. Go ahead. Do the TV. They keep it. Always them. But I thought I was going to have this and use this as a chip. And he said, no, you don't want to work for me. We just pretty hard on the people at the time because we were just changing over. New ownership, which right now, AEG, you know, just fortunate, Tom, to still be here because they're, you know, when you talk about entertainment, industry, you know, they're right at the top with all over the world now. They have buildings, they have concert venues, Coachella and Stagecoach here in the desert, all AEG run. Like crypto.com, all of that was nothing was there, right?
Yeah, it's really changed, right? You think back to the old purple and gold, then Wayne gets there, and now like the Kings are a big thing now in Los Angeles in that market. So very cool.
Yeah, you know, and it helps when you win twice, right? When you win, that change, you know, Wayne changed the landscape, but winning that made it different because you're in here against the Dodgers, the Lakers. And then you're thinking of other things too, but you've got used to have the Rams and the Raiders. Yep. Now they got the Rams back. Now they've got the Chargers. But then you've got UCLA and USC, huge programs for, you know, NCAA. So it gets pretty crowded. And I think now we can say that we're 2-time champions. I still think that goes a long way to, you know, keeping you in that market.
Speaking of the Dodgers, is Shohei Ohtani guilty or what?
What's that?
Is Shohei Ohtani guilty of the gambling or what?
Man, it's hard to believe that he wouldn't know what's going on, right? I guess from what I've heard, Carlin Bathe, daughter of Frank Bathe, they used to play.
Yes.
Yeah, reporting now.
Oh, okay.
In LA for Bally Sports. And she does the Angels in the summer.
Right.
And she said it would be hard to believe that he would be involved. She said he was one of the quietest, most meek, you know, individuals, just very to himself. Of course, you know, language barrier, that type of stuff. But, yeah, you know, over the years, you hear certain things going on. But I cracked one the other day. First one.
I saw that, yes, yeah. All right, so you finally get to the point where you win the cup. And although, yes, you're not playing, but we touched on it earlier. Did you feel that you're going into it, that team was good enough to win the cup?
Well, it's one of the few times preseason special we had. I just, my statement was this. I honestly believed it was the best roster the Kings had ever had.
Oh.
At least since I was around. And I said on the air, I said, I don't think the Kings are going to be a favorite by any means to even win the division. But I said, if they win the Stanley Cup, I will not be surprised.
Very cool. Nice.
I just thought that they had it coming together. Mike Richards had just come over that previous summer. And then you had all of the other guys, you know, coming together, and the Kopitars and the Dowdies and the Quicks and the maturing, and, you know, gone through some playoff series where they lost. But way back to when we first started this conversation, they kept the group together, right? They didn't panic. They kept so they could learn from those types of things.
Yeah.
So Mike Richards came over, and he really changed how the guys thought the game.
Yeah.
Competitive nature. He was nasty, like Dave Taylor. He was dirty. He was, and then at the the trade deadline, we picked up Jeff Carter, and that was the final piece. And
that's right. You know, how about Jonathan Quick? We had the party after, and he gets up and speaks. Jonathan Quick, he set the record for the most baseball seven balls. It was hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd had a few cocktails that day.
You know, Quickie, that's him to a T. He's he wears everything. He's that was he won the Conn Smythe that year.
Yeah.
You talk about how weird it was. We were up 3-0 in every series. Every series. They won 10 in a row on the road. I mean, just crazy, crazy stuff. And you know, and then you know, you get to the final series and we're playing New Jersey and got a little bit. We had to win in game six here, but it was you win, go up 3-0 in every series. That's a
And you guys were underdogs in every series too.
Yes. Yeah. We finished eighth.
Yeah.
We qualified for the playoffs. Second last game in our season.
Yeah, remember that.
But you know, they had enough skill, but they had a man, they were a powerful team.
Yeah, then 2 years later, Tom, 2 years later they hurt us here in New York.
It was what big defense? It was a Green, big strong guy too. Was that
Green?
Yeah, I like him.
From the blue line, yeah, for sure. What that year, 2012, the first year, all six defensemen played every playoff game.
Oh, wow.
Never had an injury. I'm sure they were injured. Never missed a game.
Yeah.
All six.
He was funny at the ceremony, too. Doughty got up there and talked first. And Doughty said about two words, right? He's not a public speaker at all. And Green gets up after him and he goes, "How about that speech?" That was like, remember that?
He is dead, Pam. Oh, man. Sometimes he's tough. He's one of those guys, like to the media, he becomes, which I joke with him now. He works in the player development with the Kings, but what? In the media, he's like Mr. Businessman. You know, we know, like behind the scenes, he's one of the biggest jokers. He's so sarcastic. He keeps you on your toes. I'm sure he's a big practical joker. Yeah. But yeah, but after that, all right, it's all over now. You won. Then he let loose a little.
Oh, that was funny. That was great. I loved watching that. You know, as much as you're kind of jealous that you want to be part of it because I was a King, you're still happy for all you guys. You know, Luke Robitaille's there. There's a guy, Luke Robitaille. I'm so proud of that guy, man. He's done unbelievable in the business world. Man,
it was one of the lockouts that it might have been the full year lockout. Right. He went to the people at AEG and he said, "I'd like to intern. I'd like to go work. I'd like, you know." Then he goes back and plays and ends up as a Hall of Famer. And at the time, the highest scoring left wing in the history of the NHL.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then when his playing days were over, that internship paid off. I mean, similar to me, like that year I missed, I went and interned basically in community relations. And then, you know, I think that they don't forget that.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah, it shows your work ethic, right? You don't have to do that. You're doing something for to get better yourself. Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. How long are you going to do this job?
Not too much longer.
Oh.
Getting near the end. Don't know exactly what's on the horizon. I do have one more year left on a contract. The Kings have been great to me. They told me that as long as I want. But it's charter everywhere.
Yeah.
The Ritz-Carlton is the worst hotel we stay at.
Wow.
But travel is just, it's just starting to book me. 47 years of travel. It's just starting to get to the point where, but I'm still enjoying it. The team is, you know, we've made the playoffs the last 2 years. Some of those years, you know, it's tough when you're not even close to the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, just as we speak, we just played San Jose last night and they were officially picked up the first chances for the first overall pick. That's tough doing, you know, 85 games or 82 games a year.
Yeah, it's hard to find something to talk about, right? To have that life and energy. Yeah.
You want to keep it positive, right? You want, and you know you're in a rebuild. They are a rebuild. We went through it too. But at the same time, know, patience runs thin with a lot of people.
Yeah, I know doing those broadcasts when the game doesn't mean anything, you're trying to find stuff that's interesting and entertaining. And like you said, you're trying to be positive. It's your team, but you suck, right? So it's like, you don't do it. And you got the wine company going too?
Yes, I do. I co-founded a wine label in 2011 was our first vintage. So we started about 2009 getting things together. It's called Patsonnet Cellars. Patsonnet is French for to have skated. The past tense of skate, or actually for the English majors out there, the past participle of skate.
Oh, wow.
I was fortunate to have skated at crypto.com arena last night. So we started off with just one line, Pinot Noir. Now we have four different Pinot Noirs. We have a Chardonnay. We have a Cabernet. Doing very well, touch wood. The critics love our wines. Mike Smith, not a former goaltender, not a Hall of Fame jockey, but he's our winemaker. He's just kicking butt right now. So
very cool.
Really proud of Patsonnet Cellars. And you know, we wanted to keep hockey involved somehow with the name and the branding. And our labels are actually, we have to put them on by hand. They're actually mimic hockey pucks. They're like rubber.
Ah.
And skate lines in the ice and the foil on the top, things like that. But we did a little research. We did a little online research of, you know, choosing a name. And, you know, people, when they see the name, they go, Patine, Patine, because it has an accent for the French at the end, turned into Patine. But we did a little research, and it came out that if people have trouble pronouncing the name, they'll spend more money for the wines.
Oh, okay. Very cool. So Patine Cellars. Can people get that online?
Yeah. We're basically direct customer online. Okay. So Patine Cellars, P-A-T-I-N-E, Cellars, like a wine cellar.com. And all the information is there. You can order online.
Cool.
And, it's you know, you hate to, wine bread is the number one failure rate in California, even more than restaurants. You know, there's 5,000 labels in California alone for wine. Wow. So it's a tough place. We're small. We've grown, but we're small. We're taking it small. And so we saw so far doing very well. So I just want to keep it going that way.
Patsonnet Cellars, for anybody who wants that wine from Jimmy Fox put together.
Outstanding Pinot Noir, Cabernet, and Chardonnay. I'm not afraid to say it because I know when the critics get it, they review it, they love it, and the people love it too.
Very cool. Very good. Get Patsonnet Cellars. How is your wonderful wife doing? She's a total sweetheart.
Susie's doing great. As we speak, she's in Florida right now. She's at a friend's 70th birthday. I can't travel right now because of the King schedule, but everything's good. She's, you know, I know when Bob Miller's wife, Judy, was here, you know, I called her the first lady of the Kings. I think Susie's kind of taken over that.
And, yeah, cool.
It's, you know, when people are coming into town, the coaches, you know, you gravitate to someone who's been here a while, and Susie's been here for 40.
What? Think about it. You've had an incredible life. Like, how many other people have done? Stayed married to the same woman since you're in school together. Stayed with one organization your entire adult life.
That's fortunate. It's not easy.
But I know you as a person. Like, you know, the business side of it, like, you're very dedicated. You work hard at it. It's your craft. You're passionate about it. Like I said, when you were crying that day when the Kings won the cup, it was very obvious how passionate you were. And with your wife, I remember you guys, like, we were all a bunch of muttheads, and you were, your wife, and that's it.
I remember, Tom, just as we're preparing for our major fundraiser, Tippa King.
Yeah.
And AEG had just brought the team, so they didn't really know. So the big executive, one of Phil Anschutz's, his right-hand man, is walking back into the King's offices. This is still at the Forum. And we're working on Tippa King. I'm behind there. And Susie's at the desk working too. Like, she's volunteering. She's just working extra. It's coming around 5 days away. And we're spending all. And this gentleman walks back to the office and starts asking Susie about, you know, can you do this for me? Like she thought, he thought that she was a worker, an employee there. And she wasn't. She was just helping out. So, yeah, I say it this way, Tom. My next day at work will be my first day at work.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, played. Community relations was, you know, but broadcasting, you know, I watch a game, you know, that's my job.
Yeah, you're being humble, though. You put the work into it.
Very fortunate. I can't say enough about that.
You put a lot of work into it, though. You have to prepare for that. People don't know that all the time. You need to be prepared. Know the lineups on the other team, their tendencies, talk to the coaches.
Yeah, exactly.
And you do all that. So, well, listen, I got to tell you, I love playing with the Kings. You're one of the guys I love playing with. It was a fantastic time I had there. so glad you came on the show there. And again, I really do think, I think you know this already, but you should be very proud of yourself, the life that you have led, you know, the dedication, the discipline and everything. Not that everybody does that. You look around, people stay with one organization that long and do a, like, it's a high profile job. So you should be very proud of yourself. So,
I appreciate it. And I follow you quite a bit. I know that you spend a lot of time trying to help other people. You try to spend a lot of time inspiring a lot of other people. And you know what? We all need that at times, right? We all need that at times. And you just need it. Yeah. So, you know, but you get through it and you go on and you move on. I know you're very important to a lot of people that way. So I want to thank you for what you do. I follow it quite closely.
Thank you. One last question, though. Were you cheering for me on Survivor, or were you hoping I'd do for that?
Well, I don't watch. Yeah. See that big head you got right now? I don't watch that getting any bigger.
Oh, I know. It's true. Well, Tom gives me a hard time because he's learned I just plow through things. You know, I think I can do anything.
Yeah.
You watch, though.
Yeah. Walk around my
Well, you didn't have to waste that much time watching, Jim. You're exactly. You're only there for a couple of days.
Yeah. All right, Foxy, thank you very much for coming on the show. Listen, I'd love to do another show with you. You can tell stories all day long, so we'll contact you there. We'll get you on another show. Thanks. Good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim. Tom, I love when you have your teammates on because the big smile on your face and you tell the stories. It's great when you have people you don't know, but when you have your teammates, like, there's a little bit more of a smirk, and you know when you're talking about it.
Yeah, that's very good. I like the way you put that because, you know, the guys you played with, you know, you've done things together on the ice, competing, you know, so there's that bond, but also off the ice.
Off the ice.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is funny. It is true. I look at myself sometimes, like with Foxy there coming on, I just couldn't stop smiling. Great old memories. You know, I think what it was too that, and I've touched on this so many times, where when I got traded from the Rangers, I loved the Rangers so much. I love New York. So I wasn't against LA or the Kings. But when I got there, what a great bunch of guys we had. And Foxy was one of them. So that's cool.
Yeah, it's funny. Everyone associates you with the Rangers and as a Ranger. And I mean, you've crafted like that. That's your post-hockey life, or at least now it is. But you said today, I'm a King. I was happy when they won. And I was like, wow, you never really think of that as you were. You were 4 years there. But it's like, you're also a King. And you're a Northern Michigan. What are they called? Pussycats? What's it? Pussycats? Oh, I thought it was a Pussycat.
Well, you know, part of it is, too, with the Kings, there's so many people in the organization now, including Foxy, that I played with, like Luke Robitaille, who we had on.
Yep.
Rob Blake, who's a general manager there now, played with him for a little bit. So it's all those guys that have been with the Kings for so long, you're happy for them.
Think of them as Kings. You're happy for them.
Yeah.
You're one, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've had Luke Robitaille, so you got to meet him. What a great guy he is, too. Yep. So you wanted
him.
He's the president. So
great guy. Yeah, and I think we think of, you know, I was just going through my head of the roster we've had, and we're up to almost 100 shows now, and there's been a lot of Kings on the show.
Yeah.
From that team. There's Bernie Nichols, Tim Waters, Luke, Bruce McNall,
Luke,
you know, Darrell Evans.
Lukowicz.
Yeah, that's right. Luke was on the show, too. So we've had a ton. I mean, Morris Lukowicz was on the show. We had Charlie Simmer.
Yeah.
So there's been a ton of Kings on the show. Darryl Sador. Wow, they just keep popping up. So, we're kind of echoing your career with the Ranger guests and with the King guests. But it's always fun to see you get that big smile. And, you know, it's like you're back with your boys, you know, back in the day. It's really cool.
It's true. Remember we had Morris Lukowicz on? That was funny, that show, because he's telling stories. I say, I'm trying to move on to the next one. He goes, oh, hold on. Now, tell me, I got to finish the story.
Well, listen, game recognizes game, and you have to respect that.
Yeah,
just like you. He's just plowed through.
So, that was true. That's good. They're very nice. I never thought of that.
That was great. But Jim Fox, great guy, very well liked guy. No one has a bad word to say about him in hockey, and it was great to have him on. He said he listens to the show, so I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. Good to know. That's
funny. Good guy he is. You know what I like about him? Like you were talking about, it's like so dedicated, like to his family, to his wife. How many guys do we know that have been like one organization for that long? And we touched on it too. I really, once we have him on the show, I start thinking about it, like, wow, how many other people do what have done what he does?
Maybe that's the secret. You know, who knows? I don't know.
Yeah.
But good for him. He seems very happy. He's had a nice career. He's about to, you know, he's looking at the end of it to retire. But what a great run. Like you said, he's the longest tenured NHL employee right now, from player to post career. That's incredible. So his full change was stayed in the same place.
Yeah. Yeah, just changed careers. That's pretty cool, yeah.
But awesome. Awesome show. And if you liked it, please leave us a review on Apple. Tell your friends. Share it around. Check us out on social media. And if you want to get hold of Tom and have him come to your event or just fold bread. No, proof some bread for you, you can email.
Sourdough bread. We'll show you how to have a lesson on how to make sourdough bread. Actually, I got the starter out now. I'm going to make some tomorrow, too.
He's going to start proofing. Get to proofing.
Yes. Fold and stretch.
Coach Nate Brown in Minnesota. There he is. He's doing cooking. But if you like the show and you want to email us, go fullchangepodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, spread the word.
Great show today too, by the way.
All right, Grasshoppers, thank you for listening. We had a fantastic show. We'll see you next time.
Why?
If you have T-Mobile 5G home internet, you might be hearing this a lot.
Why?
Every time your internet slows down during the busiest hours.
Why?
Because your network gives priority to cell phone users.
Why?
Good question. Why not switch to Cox Internet with 2x faster download speeds than T-Mobile 5G home internet during peak hours?
Okay.
Stop the whys and visit cox.com/5G home for details. T-Mobile prioritizes certain T-Mobile phone users over home internet users during times of congestion.